What's happening?
On this episode, we had labor feast in the CFL, and well, then we didn't. Training camp is here, and the flags are back already. Crack those cold ones, it's the Argos Fancast. You can find us at Argos Fancast, or anywhere you find your friendly neighborhood podcast, just search Argos Fancast. I am Clay Chisholm. You can find me at All Kinds of Clay on the various social media machines. And joining us, as always, our resident historian from ArgoFans.com. He is the VP of Football Operations, Will Gertler, MBA.
Good evening, everybody. You can find me on Twitter at ArgoFans or join up at www.ArgoFans.com. It don't cost nothing.
And from the double blue border, Sir Douglas of House Ballinger, second of his name, Lord of Section 116, Warden of the South Side, and Protector of the Realm.
Morning, everybody. You can find me on Twitter at DougB519. You can find my group, the Double Blue Order, on Facebook at facebook.com/Double Blue Order, on Twitter at Double Blue Order, on Instagram at The Double Blue Order, and you can still get Double Blue Order merchandise, including the law firm t-shirt, doubleblueorder.ca.
Well, as the Game of Thrones theme recedes, it's been a while since we've done a show. We have the draft to talk about. We thought we had labor peace, and then we didn't, and now we don't. But maybe we do. We don't know. Training camp started, then it didn't, and it did for some people. Then it started. We had a script. We had a lot of things go on the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. We did. We let it build up too much, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess we can start with the big ticket item of the day. It's the collective bargaining agreement between the players and the league. It didn't start this year. Has started out relatively rocky. For the first time in nearly 40 years, the CFL players went on strike. For all of 96 hours, and then the bargaining committee and from the CFLPA and the CFL reached a tentative 7-year deal to allow training camp to open 3 days late, or 96 hours total.
Which it did.
That's four.
And that was pending ratification of a player's vote. And, well, as we've got wind, yes, last night there was a thought that it may not be ratified, and then that came to reality, and the deal got voted down by the players.
But they're still talking, which is a good thing.
They're still talking, and they're still practicing as they.
Yeah. Now, this deal, which, I mean, everybody saw as something that the would be good for players as a whole, and you know, felt that the league had a lot of concessions that they made. I guess wasn't good for, well, at least what we're hearing was many of the Canadian players. I don't even know what to say. Like,
you're flabbergasted, is what it is.
At the absurdity of it all.
Yeah, like, I mean, we went from going, okay, this is going to be a great deal for the players, and then it's the players that voted down. But I mean, then as we see, kind of Twitter erupted, and it looked like there was a divide between the Canadian and American players, with the biggest point of contention was some financials and the ratio adjustments that they agreed upon. I'm just trying to find, Farhan Laji summed it up pretty well. I'm just trying to find his tweets, but all of a sudden, you know, he's tweeting more than just a one a day kind of thing. Where are we? Okay. So the ratio update was 8 starting Canadians, one of whom is a nationalized Canadian, so a veteran American of at least 3 years with the same team, or 5 total in the league. 3 other nationalized Americans can play up to 49% of all snaps on offense or defense, and that's for the season, not per game. Salary cap increase, access to all revenues, including Grey Cup, and the ability to audit those numbers, 5 years of medical benefits by year 3 of the deal, protection of Canadian jobs and veteran Americans, the ability to negotiate up to a 50% guaranteed on the 3rd year of a 3-year deal, and it was a 7-year deal with an opt-out after the TSN contract expires in 5 years. Plus, this deal would end 30 days before the training camp in 7 years. I mean, on paper, it sounds like a fantastic deal for the players, at least compared to what they've had in recent years. But I guess not.
Enough decided no, and I suppose we won't. I suppose the voting statistics won't be released.
Oh no, no, that stuff's usually private, like secret ballot. So you're not going to know.
No, but I mean who said no, who said yes.
That's the point of a secret ballot.
Yep.
Yeah, but we technically have a secret bet when we vote in an election, right? You don't have to tell anybody who you voted for.
But everybody's going to ask you.
Yeah, but you become one of the numbers, you know, when they announce how much votes each person got.
You know, if you believe some, like, I think when Twitter exploded, there was a lot of people with knee-jerk reactions. Some much more accusatory than others.
It's certainly too simplistic to assume that every Canadian said no and every American said yes. What caught my eye more was apparently only 70% of the players voted.
that was a huge thing for me, because normally, you know, I've never been in a labor union, so I wouldn't really know what the turnout for something like that would be, but I would assume for something that is hugely connected to your potential earnings, even more so than just your regular labor unions, that the players would want to vote in this. But yeah, hearing numbers, only 70% voted.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah, especially since they're all there.
Yeah, like normally turnouts for union, like when you're voting on stuff like this, is upwards of 90 to 95%, possibly more. But the fact that only 70 voted, that something not right.
No, something's really not right. And I mean, for the first time in a long time, this deal, I thought this deal was fair for both Canadians and Americans, because that's the other point. You know, you've got a union that has two sides to it, and both have very different needs as far as how they need to set up their income and job security. I mean, most Americans are up here temporarily for the season in temporary housing, and they're sending money back home. Whereas a lot of Canadians are, you know, yeah, some of them are living in different cities and still have the same thing, but a lot of them are, this is home. They're not, you know, it's a lot easier to work in a different city in the same country than it is to work in a completely different country. Like, I would very much love to know where the divide was. I know we're never going to find that out, but I really don't understand. Like, I just don't understand. Like, I know that they're okay. I'm going to be totally honest.
Here we go.
This whole bullshit pissed me off. I hate that we have to sit here and argue semantics about all this crap, because grown adults can't figure things out or be honest with each other, even when you're on the same side. And if I'm wrong about that, then the CFLPA leadership and the player reps aren't listening to what their constituency is telling them. So you either have people who were, you know, too scared to say something and you know, want to do things behind your back, or you've got a leadership that isn't listening. Like, it's idiotic. And I'm behind the players in this, but the way they're dealing, the way this came out is just stupid. Absolutely stupid.
Well, it's like the sympathy, well, not everybody, but the sympathy went from the players last week, and then now it's I won't say it's fully with the owners, but, you know.
Oh, I'm not on the owner's side at all.
No. A lot of people don't have sympathy for the players right now either.
No. Yeah, I mean, there are people talking about, okay, the sympathy is going to shift from, or the, you know, being behind one side, you're going to shift it. Fuck no. Right now, you know, the CFLPA needs to look themselves in the mirror and figure this out. The players have voted it down. The grouping of them that spearheaded all this, they need to explain to their reps and the negotiating committee or whatever they're called, what their problems are. And I hope they've already done that. But here we are.
And to be perfectly honest, the clock is ticking.
Mm-hmm. Thursday midnight.
Yep.
Pretty much, yeah.
Thursday midnight, the owners are going to play the Uno reverse card and lock the players out.
Yep.
If they don't ratify the deal by then.
Yeah. Or at least to come to an agree.
Maybe tentative.
But. Yeah. Message in there. Get your acting gear, CFLPA.
Yeah. Figure it out.
Yeah. I don't think any of us have much more to say about it, do we?
No.
I feel like we're all...
Yeah, if we're all here, all here, yeah, figure it out. You figure it out. You know, it's like an episode of Letterkenny.
Listen here, Shorzy.
I can't chirp as well as he can.
No, I don't. That is some extremely well versed chirping. You know, the players are going, and yeah, so yeah, players are there. So we did have at least a few days at camp. We had a double blue game. We can talk about that. But I think first we need to kind of look at the guys that the Argos drafted. We talked to Ben. He was really high on the running back, Daniel Adebaboye.
Yep.
And
they got him.
The Argos made him sweat, but they did pick him up in the with their third pick in the draft. With their first pick, they picked up offensive lineman Gregor McKellar. And then they
as is tradition.
Yeah, they always got to pick an offensive lineman first. And then with their second pick, they gambled and took Deonte Knight. He had agreed to a couple NFL rookie camps. Including him, the Argos have now signed all 12 players in their 2022 draft class. Rounding out that, we've got linebacker Enoch Penny-Laria, offensive lineman Braden Knoll, linebacker Daniel Kwamu, DB Eric Sutton, tight end Chase Arsenault, offensive lineman Michael Pizzuto, and then on the global side, we've got punter Josh Haggerty, defensive lineman Simeon Okonta Oriso, and offensive lineman Octavio Amorim. All of them under contract with the Argos.
Welcome aboard, guys.
Yes.
What a time for you to come in.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah,
you do have to wonder some of these Canadians coming in. Or sorry, no, the American, like the first year guys coming in and like, what the fuck is going on?
Like, what did I get myself into?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. With some of these draft picks, and I know there was a couple of these guys that we weren't sure we were going to see. But you know, Deontay Knight being the big one of them. But he is in camp. So you know, good luck to these guys. And if you look at anybody's scorecard, the Argos very much scored really high with this draft. We'll take their words for it.
Even third down couldn't argue with any of them.
And I'm pretty sure we were all expecting an F- there.
Yeah, well. But with camp, we do have a few things that, some unexpected things that has happened, I guess, for people, that are in the know, they probably saw some of these coming, but, Arjen Colquhoun retired.
Yeah, I think he's working as an account rep at LMLSC now.
Yeah, he's.
If any Argo fans have Arjen Colquhoun as your account rep, please let us know because that would be very interesting.
Yeah, and then we also saw Theron Churchill. He has left the Argos training camp on the second day, and he announced that he's stepping away from football but hopes to return. He wants to be more present as a dad. His girlfriend just had their first child, so he wants to be there, and that's commendable. The Argos granted it and wished him well. So he'll sit on the suspended list.
As do we.
Yep.
Hopefully your child is born healthily and healthy.
Kind of said that twice there, Will.
I kind of think of another word, healthily and safely.
Healthily healthy. That's it.
Yeah.
That's what you're going for.
Well, also congratulations to Portis Beattie on the birth of his child a few weeks before training camp.
Yeah. So some Argo babies out there.
Mm-hmm.
And among the new faces in Argos training camp, you know, we've got a new center that's stepping in until Nicastro is back from injury. What else do we got here?
Justin Lawrence is his name.
Yes, Justin. That's I was looking for the name Justin Lawrence. He's in at quarterback is Chad Kelly, nephew of Bills all-time great quarterback Jim Kelly.
Rod Black, we miss you now.
Jed Kelly has a ton of talent. We just have to see how it translates onto a game situation.
Yep.
Well, I mean, he looked very good in. Cause I know I attended the double blue game and the practice on Monday. He looked very good.
And to be honest, based on what I've seen, you know, I think if Lofgren goes down, right now I think Chad Kelly is the better option to put in there and still keep now, Pipkin as your short yardage guy.
Now, to be fair, as Ben Grant pointed out in his analysis of the double blue game, or whatever it's called, that, you know, what they were running, you know, really was not conducive to Pipkin's skill set.
No.
I mean, it was touch football, right, essentially.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't simulate certain things like the quarterback being able to take off, slip out of the pocket or whatever.
Yeah.
So it wasn't necessarily, but yeah, I mean, you got to recall too that, I mean, besides McLeod, all the quarterbacks did not look extraordinary. I mean, the defense definitely ruled that practice.
Yeah, and one of the things though that I'm looking at is, you know, I didn't get a chance to attend the double game, but I was at practice on Monday. And one of the things I'm always looking for is timing of the quarterback's throws with the receiver's route. And Lofgren, who has been notorious for being a little bit late, looked pretty on the money on Monday. Antonio Pipkin and Austin Simmons were a little bit behind the receivers. Chad Kelly was better than both of them, but not as good as McLeod Bethel Thompson. You guys both attended the double blue game. You know, was there anything that stood out to you guys?
No, I mean, the defense was definitely way ahead of the offense. It seemed that the front seven had somebody in the backfield on a lot of the plays, but from that angle, the problem also I have is those white practice jerseys are sometimes difficult to make out the numbers.
Yeah.
So I had trouble telling, you know, and you're watching it from, you know, an angle where you can't really tell who the linemen were. But no, my general observation was MBT did finally, you know, he got into a bit of a rhythm finally. There were a few dropped passes by the receivers. A couple guys who, you know, are trying to make this team. But no, our defense definitely has the potential to be aggressive and great.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, Brandon Banks is a Toronto Argonaut. I saw it with my own eyes.
We all did, Will. We all did. And you kept pointing that out.
To Nick, because it annoyed him so.
Repeatedly and often.
Yeah. Look, Nick, Brandon Banks. And Andrew Harris is a Toronto Argonaut, too. I saw it with my own eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's going to be interesting. I mean, the one thing that I noticed on Monday when I was at camp is the defense the defense is already in mid-season chirp form. They're loud. They're right on it, which is honestly, I kind of like seeing that when your defense has a little bit of an edge to it like that. You know, and to be totally honest, they were calling each other out too if they missed something. So, you know, a lot of people knowing what every position should be doing is a very good sign for a defense. But having that swagger, it's something you always want out of your defense. And from what we've seen and heard about Corey Mace, these players really like playing for him. So that's a great sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I know what I saw. I like the way this defense looks already.
Don't get too caught up in it.
I know.
It is still early in preseason, and defenses always tend to look a little bit better.
Yep.
From the jump, but
we lost our train of thought.
Yeah. So it sounds like it got, well, sounds like it hit an iceberg.
Iceberg. Dead ahead.
Now, what is it? I mean, the defense is always going to look good right off the jump. You know, the offense is usually a little bit more complicated and take a little bit more time to come around. You know, and the little scrimmage bits that they did have on Monday, it looked like the offense was getting things together a little bit more. AJ Ouellette, in the absence of Andrew Harris on Monday, looked amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And Doug, I believe you likened him to having notes of Chad Kacker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did because he looked like him when he was. When they were doing the drills, he looked like the way old Chad used to play.
Javon Leak also looked pretty good on Sunday. He's another guy looking for a running back spot.
Yeah, just I'm going from Ben Grant stats. He had 3 carries for 21 yards. Long of 13, not bad. Not bad. Harris, 1 carry for 10 yards. The other guy that I thought looked great on Monday in practice was Sam Baker. And Doug, you can attest there was one play where he caught one. Literally, where he disappeared in a sea of dark blue jerseys and came out with the football. And I audibly said, how the fuck did he catch that?
Yep. Yeah, I remember that because it was like he was in like double or triple coverage at least.
Oh,
and he managed to come up with the ball. It's like,
and then came out with the ball.
Yeah.
I think they want him to use him as one of those fullbacks too.
Yeah, he's going to. It sounds a lot like they want him to be in that Andre Dury position.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if he's going to. I mean, he has a lot of guys in front of him.
Yeah. But, I mean, when you've got what it seems like a multiple positions that they want to get you a look at, that's a good thing.
Yep.
On Monday he primarily lined up a wide receiver slot back. I think it was slot back for the most part. And he primarily lived in the middle of the field. So if you've got a guy like that that's not afraid of contact, that's a good skill to have. Now,
one other thing, I don't know if you're going to get to it, but I would like to mention something about John Haggerty.
Oh, go ahead.
Man, can he boot a football?
Holy crap, he's got a leg.
He has got one hell of a leg on him.
I mean, we watched him kicking from, was it zone 40, I believe? Or 35?
Some of them was like zone 30, too.
And he was consistently landing them at the 5-yard line in the corner. Not just the 5-yard line, in the corner.
No, he was doing coffin corners all day.
And they had height on them. I think he needs to get a little bit more height on some of those, especially if they're going to be, you know, kick, you know, 60, 65 yards like that. But damn. You know, early on, he was consistently out kicking, out punting Mr. Sato by at least 25 yards.
We know that Mr. Sato's not
a great punter.
No.
But it was extremely obvious on Monday when they did a lot of special teams drills.
Mm-hmm. Serious thought to having him do the punting and let Bordas, the boot, concentrate on kicking.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely thought. And I mean, the only thing that I can see holding Josh Haggerty back is the fact that we've got a guy who can do both jobs in our penciled in as a starter or penned in as a starter. But Josh Haggerty does not place kick. So that may be the only thing that stands in his way of making this team.
Whether they want to break that down.
You know, if they want to break that down and have Bordas fully concentrate on the field goals and kickoffs.
Bordas the Spider.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
I think it was a song by The Who.
It was. No, and he doesn't look like a guy who's going to be afraid to throw his body out on specials either, is he?
No. I mean, the dude is, he's not that old. He did go to university in the States. But he is a former Aussie Rules player, so
I would like to know, because he was born in Sydney, so I wonder if it was back then, if it was Giants or was it Swans? I don't know. It's a question that we should ask him one day.
Yes. And you can put it just like that, Giants or Swans.
And then he'll probably throw a curveball and say Dockers or something.
we'll take your word for it that's an option. Because I don't know about you, Will, but I don't know much about Aussie Rules football, so
I know nothing. Except that it's a version of football played under Australian rules.
And it's friggin' spectacular. it is literally chaos with a rouge.
Interesting.
But it's not like gridiron because they play on cricket pitches. So yeah. Massive field, and they kick the ball everywhere. 6 points if you get it in between the posts. If you put it in between another, like the outer set of posts, it's only 1 point. So another, they call it a behind. We would call it a rouge. So
all right,
season's going on right now, and I've yet to pick a team. Anyone's got any suggestions as to who to follow, hit me up. If you say Essendon, though, I might have to punch you. Because they stink. And they've stunk for a while.
Okay. Well, I think we've got some questions now lined up for Mr. Josh Haggerty, should he make this team. Mm-hmm. Or even before then.
Yeah.
We'll have to get him at practice and see what we can do there. Well, we got away from a little bit, but now I think we have to go back and talk about some more stuff with the CBA.
Illegal procedure, defense, they made the offense move, 5-yard penalty, first down repeated.
Okay, here are the flags. And we've kind of skirted around dropping flags directly on Three Down Nation, but this one...
Well, except for the lost episode that is never going to get aired.
I think that recording is long gone.
Yeah, I know. Which is sad because I went on a wicked rant there. Oh, sad.
So, John Hodge and Three Down Nation reported yesterday evening that there were some financial issues that the players were at odds with, and led to there was the reasoning that the deal was turned down and the league had made some tweaks to their proposal addressing those financial issues and some ratio stuff. Well, Dave Naylor, who I'm going to assume his source is not John Hodge, tweeted out about 6 hours ago, am led to believe new offer from the league to players addresses some financial issues and tweaks to the ratio proposal. Immediately, Three Down owner Justin Dunk rather
Oddly for him, because he's
uncharacteristic based on what we've seen of him publicly. Clap back at Dave Naylor. John Hodge reported the exact details last night. Naylor replied, congrats. You know, his sources were quicker than Dave Naylor sources. Now, I'm assuming that both of them are following proper journalistic source integrity and getting two sources to confirm something, but I could be wrong.
You would figure so anyway.
Yeah. After the congrats, Justin Dunk replied, literally over 12 hours ago. And so Dave Naylor replied, double congrats. Then Dunk replied, congrats is right to the up-and-comer who will not credit a whole day later. And that led to Dave Naylor going out of his way and making a post saying that, as has been made aware, John Hodge did report the same thing last night. Now, I'm sorry, but as a professional, Justin Dunk showed a side of himself that was really unprofessional, especially from what we've known from Justin Dunk.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen some of the other writers on that site do the back slapping or whatever you want to, whatever the
just,
right word.
Just about it. All of them.
Yeah, but Dunk has often stayed above that.
And this was just outright calling him out, and it based on what Dunk put out there, it implies that he believes Naylor's source is John Hodge, which I 100% doubt that Naylor's sources were John Hodge.
Mm-hmm.
They could very well have the same sources,
which is entirely possible.
Yeah, 100% possible. But I doubt that that Naylor stole the story from John Hodge. I really doubt that.
First time you really can see that there's tension, though, between Third Down and the rest of the
Mainstream media.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at it this way. I mean, we know what Third Down's editorial position is. Very pro, you know, they're very pro PA.
Pro Ticat, anti-Argo. Shall we continue?
In this whole labor thing, they're very pro PA. I mean, I haven't seen them write anything commenting on the CBA being turned down, like no opinion piece.
Just wait. I'm sure they'll find a way to blame the Argos for it.
Yeah. But I mean, and while, you know, some people might accuse Naylor and Nalji about being the league's mouthpiece, now, it doesn't make neither position is necessarily correct. You know?
No.
But I think the point here is, and they've done this in the past, of course, was there really the need to take the victory lap on Twitter?
No.
Was there really the need to be the guy on the podium, to bite the metal, kiss the girl, flip everybody off, spray champagne everywhere, and everyone else realizes they're third? Was there really the need to act like a bunch of miserable cunts on Twitter, honestly?
And those are rhetorical questions, because the answer is no. I've always tried to separate Justin Dunk from some of the antics of the people that he has writing from his publication. But this does nothing for that at all. You know, they have, you know, people who are quote unquote legitimate journalists writing for that site. Many of whom are unnamed. But you also have a lot of the people that are are named, they are, they were fans first. They were people who are still fans who don't purport to be experts, but make statements as if they were. And he, you have an individual in, you know, John Hodge there, who, in all honesty, came from being a fan-run podcast to achieving, by his own admission, his dream of being a professional journalist. Now, unfortunately, I'm extremely disappointed in Justin Dunk. Up until this point,
for him.
It was an asinine commentary, all in all. It was not needed. So from all that, came the latest tweet from Dave Naylor. Well, one of the latest tweets from 4 o'clock this afternoon. My sense from my conversation with Randy Ambrosi is that this process is going to take a sharp turn if we get to Friday with no deal. That's when it would get chaotic and the start of the season could come into play. From that, there was one reply that was absolutely fantastic. And I'm just trying to find that here. Where did I put that?
Oh, yes, I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry. It's from a different Dave Naylor tweet. Just spoke to Commissioner Randy Ambrosi and got details on the CFL's new offer to players. League provides $1 million ratification bonus to players, but removes the $450,000 from the 2022 cap and the $675,000 in guarantees in 28. The 28 cap may not be affected if revenue sharing kicks in. And then an individual, Chris Ivy on Twitter,
if that's replied to name.
Did you get permission from Justin Dunk to speak to the commissioner? I'm sure Dave Naylor is doing everything in his power to not like that tweet.
Yep. Yeah, because all the grandstanding and hot dog, and it's like, come on.
Yeah. And this Chris gentleman is from Hamilton.
Boy. Even a broken clock is right twice a day.
Like, God damn it. We are siding way too much with.
Who said I'm siding with him?
Well.
I didn't.
Agreeing. Laugh. Yeah. Yeah.
I like this tweet.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, from there,
Where's a tweet from Kazakhstan to balance this out now?
All right, gentlemen, you have 3 minutes, and you better make it good.
3 minutes, and we're out of here. We got 3 minutes, and we're out. Is this thing on?
Yeah.
Are you hearing it?
Yeah, so going back to the Going back to the three down thing, yeah, I can tell you right now, CFL Reddit is, yeah, they see right through it. They see right through it.
Through what?
Well, through what Dunk did. They're all saying he looks like an ass.
I read the same thread. I even posted in it.
I know I did too.
Yes, you did. I uploaded your thingamajiggy.
Oh, I thank you. I always appreciate Reddit karma.
Mm.
Speaking of Reddit, I did make some changes to the Toronto Argonauts subreddit. If you want to know where that is, that's reddit.com/r/Argonauts. And just some cosmetic changes that I made. I've also included on the sidebar the schedule and the East Division standings. Which has the Argos on by default always on top, and Hamilton always on the bottom, who's currently 0-4 and minus 1,999 points. So there's that. Hoagie has training camp diaries going on. Those are on Argonauts.ca. Those are very good reads. I urge everybody to check them out.
Read a couple of those, and I'm learning stuff. I mean, Hoagie's the right guy to be doing that.
Mm-hmm. He's a good writer.
He highlights
players that we otherwise wouldn't hear about.
And he knows the guys he needs to talk to for the story that he's working on. And those guys talk to him.
Okay. So I think let's take a trip, shall we? Let's take a trip.
To where?
To the steppes of Kazakhstan.
Oh.
Well, why? What were you thinking I was going to say?
12.
I can fucking drive there any day I want.
Yeah.
That's not exactly taking a trip for me, because I have to go there to work.
It's 40 minutes.
For you, maybe.
No, it's an hour. But it's 40 minutes from Waterloo.
Anyway, so one good one that I found was done a few days ago, shortly after the Argos announced the signing of a defensive back by the name of Robert Priester, and this was after Theron Churchill backed out of this upcoming season. Our friend put, yesterday we lost the church and today we have a priest.
Very well timed.
Very well timed, I thought.
The one that, that I like, you know, not necessarily the funniest, but, a lady that goes by Ray Sunshine 25 tweeted out, seriously considering season tickets for the Toronto Argonauts this year. My daughter really enjoyed the games we went to last season. Well, our friends from Kazakhstan, yes, you need to get season tickets. See how Argos dominate the pitiful competition. Well, she later tweeted out, we did it. We got season tickets.
Yay.
And our friends from Kazakhstan embracing the stereotype, tweeted out a gif of Borat. Great success!
Great success!
And then he's got some ramblings on the potash mines.
Yeah.
Dirty Uzbeks at potash mine are also respected if they can do a good job. They marry our ugly cousins and become Kazakhs. That's good.
That I believe was in response to the to one of the things in the now not ratified deal, where Americans, if they stay up here, I think for like three seasons, stay with the same team for like three or four seasons or something like that, they start to count as Canadians with regards to the ratio. So that was in response to that, and it was that's actually a pretty good analogy, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah. Or another one when he was speaking of the CBA. When we were working in the potassium mine, I said we needed pinball to help. We ended up with pinball machine that promoted the movie Risk Business. Read contracts wisely.
A risky business pinball machine. I've never seen one of those.
I have.
Everybody you have seen one?
I have seen one.
Is it as ridiculous as I'm thinking it is?
Honestly, it was a long time ago. Because I remember long time ago when we used to visit my grandmother when I was like, you know, 7 or 8, 9, when my mom would take my grandma to the bingo, my dad would take us to an arcade.
Under the B.
And 10. My dad loved to play the pinball machines. And I remember, I used to ask him about the pinball machines because it was always had stuff on them that I didn't know at the time. And there was a risky business pinball machine there. And I asked him about that and he said, it's a movie you're not allowed to watch yet. I don't know why I remember that, but because I don't remember a lot of things, but somehow I remember that.
You Google it.
There's one pinball machine I always liked. It was, I forgot what it was. I forgot the premise of it, but I thought it was entertaining. There's another one. There was another golf related one called Teed Off. It had like a little furry, had like a little stuffed gopher on top. I thought that was kind of funny.
Oh yeah, it was the Caddyshack knockoff one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't they have a pinball machine?
See, Argo's never capitalized on that.
No. If you did, Gal, you could always go, oh, yes.
just gotta get sound bites, that's all.
Oh, I need. I'm sure there's like 100 clips of pinball saying, "Oh yes, 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 yes," and I need to clip that. I need to find one of those and clip several of those because there's a pinball yes for every situation.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, since we've gone to talking about pinball machines, I think that probably does it for us this week on the Argos Fancast.
It does.
Doug, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at DougB519. You can find me on Facebook. You can find the Double Blue Order on Facebook at facebook.com/Double Blue Order. on Twitter at Double Blue Order, on Instagram at The Double Blue Order, and Double Blue Order merch still available, including the Law Firm t-shirt at doubleblueorder.ca.
Will, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at ArgoFans or at www.argofans.com.
And you can find me at All Kinds of Clay on the Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok machines. You can find the Argos Fancast at Argos Fancast, or anywhere you find your friendly neighborhood podcast, just search Argos Fancast. Well, that does it for us this week. We'll talk to you next week, where hopefully we're talking about a ratified CBA and we put all this stuff behind us. Have a good week, everyone.